Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Thank you for listening and happy belated Father's Day, wherever you spent it. All you dads out there, way to be dads, man. Way to kill it. Somebody had to be a dad, and you did, whether you wanted to or not, which happens. I spent my Father's Day weekend in Long Beach, Washington, with my sister and her husband and my nieces and nephews, and we went and saw Finding Dory. I brought fish and chips and ate them in the back of the theater and didn't realize till halfway through. So that was fucking hilarious. Went to an arcade for a while, which is great. Watched my nieces play shoot 'em up games and get into it at six. That's good. Also, we went to the beach. We ate some s'mores. We had a great time. It was nice to get away for a little bit. But now back into it and back into the shows. And today's guest is just a dude. You know, we don't have a lot of writers on. And most writers don't have like a performing background or even seem like they could do it. But our guest today, not only is one of the funniest dudes I know, one of the sweetest dudes, one of the hardest working. His journey from Maryland to New York in the comedy scene out there, meeting Kristen Schaal and Kurt Braunohler, becoming friends with them just very unexpectedly, getting to L.A., writing on Money for Strangers, Workaholics, co-producing Adam Devine's House Party with her boy Adam Devine. That's how I met Scotty Landis, who is our guest today. Scotty Landis, the one and only. If you don't know that name now, you're going to very soon. Him and Adam Devine just sold a Netflix movie. I met Scotty, came in when I got asked to kind of do some idea riffing and joke coming up with Adam and Scotty for season one of House Party, and that's how I met. And I was like, oh yeah, this dude's the shit. Adam should for sure work with him. We get into a lot of great stuff, Hawaii stories, New York stories, where his Twitter handle, Maryland Mudflap, comes from, which is, you know, way more original than Adam Ray Comedy or at Funny Brad. So, which are our Twitter handles, which is where you should follow us, as well as at ALN Podcast on Twitter. Again, at Maryland Mudflap for Scotty Landis. He's hilarious on Twitter, so follow him. And Adam Ray 33 on Instagram, Brad Williams Comic on Instagram, at ALN Podcast on Instagram, estoymerchandise.com for all your ALN merch, estoymerchandise.com, hat, shirts, mugs, posters. The ET posters are being made as we speak, so be on the lookout for those in the next week, as well as a few other good photos that our girl Nicole Bisek took for us. Tour dates. I'm going to be in town for all summer, baby. Of course, I told you, Mad TV. We premiere July 26th at 9 p.m. on the CW. I'm so fucking pumped. I can't even tell you guys. Been meeting with the writers a bunch and just pumped. It's going to be dope. It's a great time for sketch to have, you know, have more shit out there than just SNL. So I'm pumped to work with this cast. They're super funny. We shot all the promo stuff and opening sequence stuff last week, and that'll be out soon. But set your DVRs, 9 p.m. Tuesday nights, CW. Premieres July 26th, baby. But I'll be in town, L.A., all summer. So AdamRayTV.com for all my local tour dates. Improv Comedy Store, Laugh Factory, I'll be there a lot. I will be in San Francisco on June 23rd with Eric Andre for one show at the Mezzanine Theater, June 23rd with Eric Andre. Check AdamRayTV.com for tickets. Brad Williams, BradWilliamsComedy.com for all his tour dates. June 23rd, June 24th, and June 26th. Brad is in Lexington, Kentucky at Comedy Off Broadway. Go see Brad Williams June 23rd, 4th, and 26th. Lexington, Kentucky, Comedy Off Broadway. And I think that's it for the shows, except for, oh, here's a fun little bit of show info. We're interviewing this week Adam Devine and co-star of Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, his new movie coming out July 8th. Zac Efron. That's right, baby. Efron and Devine. Holy shit. If your inner 13-year-old girl is listening to this, she's probably fucking coming in her pants. Because, holy shit, that's insane. Devine and Efron, the episode comes out Thursday. Make sure you're subscribed so you can listen to it. It's going to be bonkers. He's never done a podcast. Devine hooked it up. It's the shit. Can't wait. So now that we got the tour dates out of the way, that's all the Efron info. Those are the tour handles, Twitter handles. Fuck, I'm still drunk. That's all the merch info. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with our buddy, the hilarious Scotty Landis.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Our dope podcast. Here we go.
it's about last night.
Well, I mean, you can afford shirts with lots of animals on them.
Yeah, man.
I love that shirt. Is that a shirt? Is that a pre or post Hawaii shirt? Because I came back from Hawaii with like four authentic Hawaii shirts.
This was Palm Springs shirt this weekend. Ooh. I was out there this weekend, and a friend of mine was like, there's this one place that makes shirts like you can't find online.
You definitely walked into my apartment with new shirt swagger.
Yeah, I felt it. It's hot today.
It really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's and I don't know, was that just, are you the crazy shirt guy, or did that one just speak to you?
No. You're the cool shirt guy.
Yeah, I'm not a crazy shirt guy, no. Yeah, okay. Those guys.
Because like Jeff Dye wears shirts with cats on them sometimes, or magicians.
Yeah.
And, but you know, you're when you're that good looking, you can wear a shirt covered in dildos, and people are going to go,
hilarious.
What a great hilarious, or what a great shirt.
Right. Whereas the heavy set bald white guy with the Coke bottle glasses, yes. if he wears the dildo shirt, then it's like, all right.
Oh, that's sad.
That's sad.
Oh, he thinks he's funny.
No, that's not gonna work. Or maybe you think that's part of his probation, is that he has to wear that shirt to help.
Or that he found it.
Yeah. Hey, look what I got. Look at it's a dildo shirt.
Exactly.
It's hilarious. Because, like, I've got an uncle who is the crazy hat guy.
Sure.
He wears a crazy hat.
I thought you were going to say, I got an uncle who loves dildos.
He loves
like a
dildos.
Segue.
And as he's twirling them around like a lasso, he likes to wear a crazy hat. And whether it be like an umbrella, a propeller, there was a hat he gave to me when I was a 2-year-old that said shithead on it, but he told me it said sharp little boy, so I started running around and telling all the relatives, I'm a sharp little boy. They're all cracking up intensely because they know what that is.
That's great. That's a good uncle, though. That's a perfect uncle.
Yeah. Just like, okay, so it's not my kid, so I can mess him up.
Yeah, I love
that.
That's
cool.
Yeah, no, there are people. I remember I went to class, and like this guy had a cool shirt first day of class in college, and the next day had a cool one, and the next day and then this other girl, man. The way we became friends, she was like, how long do you think he can find cool shirts?
Dude, what a great...
Well, I mean, you kind of establish yourself as that dude at that point. Now, you're going to be disappointed. Like, there's a comic at the Laugh Factory where the first six or seven times I saw him, he always had a candy for me. And I don't know if that's just because... I don't know if that's a midget thing. I don't know if he thought, like,
for
well...
For sure is.
I
that's
know,
okay.
Like, that's what they eat. Like, I have no idea. But then, like, the eighth time I saw him, I was like, hey, dude, I kind of held out my hand, like, where's my peanut butter cup? And he's like, I don't have a... What? You thought you were going to get candy every time? Yes, I did.
Wow.
Yes, I thought I was going to get candy every time because you set that precedent.
Yeah, that's just... But also, the whole thing's weird. Like, that's a weird thing for him to do from the get-go. Like, once, if, like, an adult friend gives you candy, it's like, all right, twice is done.
Yeah.
Twice is so bizarre.
There's got to be a ton of things like that where it's like, you do it once, it's like a ha-ha funny, like, we can both make light of this twice.
Yeah, right.
I think, I think if you go over to a friend's house and when you get there, he answers the door and he's like, oh, sorry, man, I was just watching porn. That's good once.
Yeah.
Yeah. Twice, three times, you're like, I'm not going to hang out with you anymore.
Well, at least not here. I'm not coming over anymore.
We got to meet at a neutral location.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we don't have access to...
Yeah, if I came over and, like, brushed a hair off of your shoulder, and then...
That is such a such a great example because I feel like I've had a... I'm tapping into a dude who, like, fixed my collar once.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I go,
ooh, that's bad.
Yeah, I remember I even kind of flinched, but then I was like, okay, like, and then I go, nah, like, he was helping you, man, and your right. You don't want a fucked up collar, do you?
No.
I started to be on his side. But if he had done it again, like, even within the same hour.
Yeah,
yeah.
Forget it.
Then, code red, friend.
Yeah.
Even a good friend. A good male friend, if he adjusts your collar twice in life, you're like, stop looking at me. Like, don't judge me. Stop looking at me.
Wait, when you mentioned college, that was back east, right?
UMass. Yeah, I went to UMass Amherst.
How?
Masshole. All right.
Yeah, well, I'm from Maryland, but I went there because I did all the tours.
Crab cakes and football.
Yeah, exactly.
I just came back from Baltimore.
Did you?
Yeah.
You were doing shows?
Yeah, doing
hanging?
Shows at the Baltimore Comedy Factory.
That is a... Where is that?
It moved. It used to be at the Power Plant Live,
right?
Which is on the dock or whatever, and now it's in the basement of a Best Western hotel, which sounds depressing, but it's not. It's a nice, huge banquet room.
That's cool. Yeah, when I did stand up very briefly in college, and when I did it, it was like a contest for this website that's now gone. And the next thing I wanted to do in stand-up was going back for Thanksgiving. There was an improv in Baltimore very briefly.
Yeah.
This is probably about 2000.
Yeah.
And they had like the funniest Baltimore on contest or whatever. And I think Lewis Black was set to host it.
Jeez.
And I told my sister, she was living in Baltimore town, I was like, sign me up, put me on. I'm going to come down there and kill. Because I had just been doing college stuff for just easy crowds.
Yeah.
It was in like coffee shops on campus.
But how would you do even in those shows? I mean, the funny was in you at this point.
I did really well, but the comedy wasn't great. Like, I can look back at those and be like, okay, but I just was confident.
Yeah.
And when you're young and confident, you're willing to go up there. And also, everybody was so bad. You
okay,
know?
So you had all those factors going in.
Yeah.
No. But dude, young and confident is such a big part of it. Even if you're so bad, like, but you're confident, like, you're going to get something out of some of the awfulness.
Yeah, and it was terrible. Like, you used to come out in a wrestling unitard.
I don't see why that didn't catch on.
Wait, what?
The first four times I did stand-up, including the first time I ever did it, was at this fine arts center on campus in front of like 400 or 500 people the very first time. Jeez.
Were you a character?
No. I would just come out and do straight stand-up.
You never mentioned it.
That's brilliant.
Never mentioned it, never brought it up.
Yeah, you were ahead of your time.
Yeah, I know. I was 17, and it was 1999. And there's a tape of it. There's one tape of one of those performances.
Oh,
so I have proof.
How often do you go back and look at it?
I've only watched it once since.
You know what? That makes total sense, because my dad found an old tape of when he was living on this island called Kwajalein, being a doctor at one point for a little bit, and I went out there. I had to stand up maybe 15 times, and I go, I'm going to do 30 minutes. My dad goes, do comedy on the island for everybody. There's like 2,000 people. I go, hell yeah, Dad. But because I'd done it 15 times, I go, I'm a comic. I did 30 minutes. I didn't have 4 minutes, but I wrote 30 minutes, and I should have gotten off after 8 minutes, and it would have probably been like, hey, Lance, your son's actually – he's pretty funny.
Yes.
But after 30 minutes, they're like, hey, Lance, we're going to have to talk to you about relocating you to a different island.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like – but again, like
everyone's not making contact with his dad.
I went back and saw that tape like one time in the past, 10 years, and I haven't seen it since because I was like, that's –
that's when you burn it.
I'm just holding on to it just for the sake of, like, if people are like, did you really ever do that? I can prove it. Mm-hmm. But it's at my parents' house in Maryland. And
what if it was in your back pocket right now?
I'm wearing this cool shirt.
I'm waiting for you guys to ask me.
But then I went to go do the thing in Baltimore, and it closed. And so I've always, like, when I came home, it wasn't until recently that I even saw stand-up in Baltimore ever. How were the crowds?
They were great.
Yeah,
they were so much fun.
Yeah. So there was no comedy when you grew up there? The improv wasn't even there.
No.
So where did you get your comedy fix from?
VH1 Stand-Up Spotlight. I think Rosie O'Donnell used to host it.
Yeah.
But I can remember seeing like everybody on that, and I would just watch it.
And so you must have thought Rosie O'Donnell was the shit.
She was funny.
She was.
Mm-hmm.
I even really liked her talk show.
Yeah, she was good back then.
Hey, anytime you can like slingshot koosh balls into the audience, hell, people go nuts for t-shirts and t-shirt cannon.
Koosh balls are way cool.
Yeah, let's like throw a koosh ball into the audience. Everyone
goes
crazy.
She's gotta regret that though, right? She had it. Like she had it, and then it all went away so fast.
Well, so you would watch that, and then, I mean, did you see any sort of stand-up or, I mean, sketch show? I mean, what was the thing that made young Scotty go, oh, shit, or funny family members?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, the whole family's funny. Like, I have, my parents are funny. Everybody's great like that. But it really was like those weird early HBO things, like the new faces that they did with Rodney Dangerfield hosted, John Candy hosted.
Yeah.
One. You guys have seen all those.
The Rodney specials are some of the best ever.
Yeah.
Because you have like young Bob Saget, you got like early Dice Clay, like before people knew who these guys were. Like, it's so weird to have someone go on stage and say, all right, you know, it's Rodney, I'm going to do a horrible impression, but okay, this guy's a little intense, okay? But I really think you're going to like him.
Yes.
Sam Kinison.
Yes, I remember that
one. And people don't know who Sam Kinison is, and he just goes up, and that first time with the ow, ow, like everyone just goes ape shit.
Yeah, it was so cool.
And you're just like, because. It's like when they ever show like classic sporting events and like it's games, like the greatest games. Like you're watching the game now, knowing that guy's gonna make that buzzer beater.
Yep.
But the people there have no idea that this team is about to come back and win.
Yeah.
No clue. And it's like it's so cool to watch some of those old specials.
Yeah, and those specials actually stand up in a way that comedy doesn't. Like a lot of times, movies from that era, you're like, that's not funny. Or those shows. Like I was in like a waiting room, and Mama's Family was on. Remember that TV?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I Googled how many episodes, and it was something like 140 episodes.
Wow.
And like that show is so unlaughable. It's so terrible. And like,
what were some of the jokes? I can't even.
It was, you know, it was just a family sitcom.
It was trying to be like All in the Family, but instead of the old crotchety dude, it was the, like the old crotchety woman, but we can't make her say crazy things quite. Like,
well, yeah.
Can you pass the mashed potatoes? We don't have any. No mashed potato.
Like, right. And then she just starts punching her. Yeah. Like, but I think it felt like it had a Christian thing to it, too.
Yeah.
It felt like it had a little tilt to it where it was like built to syndicate on like softer networks.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was still on TV in 2016, so somebody figured it out.
Someone's still waiting by the mailbox for their mama's family check.
Joke.
Going, all right, we're eating at Ruth Chris tonight. Yeah, we got the mama's family's check.
So your folks were such comedy fans that they weren't, like, my mom wouldn't let me watch, like, you can't do that on television on Nickelodeon.
Love
so
it.
I would have to sneak to watch it.
Right.
But your folks were just like,
the only one, and I bet we have this in common, is my mom would not let me watch Married with Children, and as soon as she would leave, my dad would be like, let's watch it.
Yep. So, well, my dad would just leave, but then, never came back. So my mom actually showed me Married with Children because she felt bad that he wasn't there to let me watch it when she wouldn't.
What a show. But I love that show.
That show was incredible.
It's, I mean, talk about things that were ahead of its time.
Yeah.
I remember there were groups trying to shut that show down.
Yes.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was huge groups like saying this is filth. This is for our children. And like trying to shut the show
because
down.
It was too real, right? Like it,
too.
What
raunchy,
did you love about it?
Real?
Well, it had like I think what I liked about it. So well, first off, there was nothing else on TV at all like that. Like just like family that hated each other. But
right.
It was that I've never seen a show since that had that thing that Cheers had when everybody would yell Norm. That like Married with Children had like five things like that where like he'd like ask for the clicker. He'd put his hand down the front of his pants. The
people.
Refrigerator was always empty.
Right.
Bud always said the nerdy thing. Like, the whole thing was like, you were waiting for it to...
Yeah, Al would just have that time where he would go, let's rock. And then fucking crowd goes crazy.
Yeah, Polk High, and he would four touchdowns. It was so great. It just had everything.
And back to that point where you say, like, there wasn't a sitcom on where the family didn't like each other. We were so used to the cookie cutter, Leave It to Beaver type sitcoms, and they all come together at the end, and they're all smiling.
Right.
And the woman's really smart, and the dad's an idiot.
Yeah.
And that was just the model. And this thing, they were all idiots.
Yeah, they were all idiots,
and they all hate each other.
Yeah, and then there was still some love there. And I think shows today, like so many shows that people like You're the Worst, and all that kind of take from that, where it's like there is some heart in the middle of it, but. They're shitting on each other a lot of the time.
Like the daughter is a slut.
Yeah, she's a party girl.
She's a party whore, and they joke about that. The dad acknowledges that she's a whore half the time.
Yeah,
and then like that still doesn't happen today. We're like they're like yeah she bangs dudes.
Yeah, the son can't get laid. The girl's with everybody.
Yeah,
right.
It's so good. What do you love? Because you write on Workaholics, and you co-create House Party with our boy Adam.
Yeah, I mean he created it, but we developed it together.
Yeah,
yeah.
That I mean, what do you prefer? Shows with just tons of jokes and enough of a with like less heart or more. Like with Married with Children, like you became like that was a definitely something that opened your eyes to more than just what you were the VH1 stuff, right? Like you started to see like the family relationship. I'm guessing like how much of that did you see that now like on Workaholics, like the dynamic between the three guys, like
the biggest influences were easily The Naked Gun, I can watch that right now.
Holds up.
I think it's the funniest. Like I just think about it all the time, all the bits, because they're smart jokes and stupid jokes and slapstick. And then like all those early, the other ones that are like Top Secret, just basically I came up loving all those movies. So that was the thing. But I like the team stuff, like First Police Academy, like Stripes. Mm-hmm. All Ghostbusters is like my favorite because it's just like, let's put, I think Workaholics has more in common with like a Ghostbusters than anything.
Where guys have a mission together and they're like working for the same cause.
Very different.
Yeah.
Like you can, and then they have like a weirdo, like it's really good. So, but to your point is like, I think you have to like the characters. I think the strength of Workaholics initially was like, they're very funny. The chemistry between them is undeniable, but mostly it's that you can tell that they're friends and you like them even when they're being shitty, which is, what everybody struggles to do, and it's just because they were friends.
Right. You can't fake that kind of chemistry.
You can't.
You can't just put some people in the room like, all right, now you guys are lifelong friends, and Well, no, you can't just say that and tell, I don't care how good of an actor you are, you can't just like fake 15 years of history with these people.
Totally.
It can't. And that's one of the reasons why the show works so well.
Yeah. And being that likable. I mean, that, you can't fake that or try. I mean, that's either, you've either got that or you don't, right?
Yeah. I mean, star power is the rarest thing. But those guys, you can feel this thing with them where like, and in later seasons, they talked about it. And I think the reason it's still doing well, really well, is that around like the end of season four, they were like, let's get back to at the end of almost every episode. It's very clear that we like came back together instead of like, these are just four wild guys doing wild things. And I think season five was one of the two best. And I think last season was really good because we just kept bringing the friendship back in there. And we even had episodes about their friendship, which is kind of like weird for three guys.
What was the, what was the first episode? The one where they, the getaway when they were, I remember you tell me, I think cause we were on New Orleans house party.
Right.
You had just written or you, or maybe when we got back, but the one where they, there was a big action scene where they were in the car driving away.
Uh-huh.
What the fuck was that?
There's a couple in that season.
You wrote one of them, didn't you?
I wrote Beer Heist.
That's what it is.
They rob a brewery and they're trying to impress these younger girls. And we had like a trunk stunt sequence.
That's
we
right.
tried. I wanted so bad to win the stunt Emmy for Comedy Variety. Like,
wait, is that a category?
Yeah, it is.
Dude, that's what it is. Stunt, that was shot unbelievable.
Best stunt for Comedy Variety?
Yeah, Comedy Music Variety or something. And now Brooklyn Nine-Nine just, I think, wins it every year because they have like guns and
stuff
like
show.
That. Yeah, it's a cop show. Right. So, but I tried so hard for my first two, which was that one and this one with Jack Black, where we have like a parasailing accident, Adam gets dragged behind a car. Like, I wanted stunts, fights, everything. So we have in that one like wire work where the Vo is following a beer truck and like Adam Durr slams on the brake and Adam flies into the truck. And I was like, we got this. I was like, there's no doubt.
When you were watching it go down, you were like, this is unbelievable.
The whole thing, they're heisting a brewery, which is like so right up the alley for the show.
And I love that you brought up that some of your influences were like Naked Gun, because that's what they did. They had these, sure, it was a lot of just insanely well-written jokes, but then some of the action sequences are pretty freaking impressive.
Yeah.
The scene in one of Naked Guns where the guy just keeps blowing up, but he's like riding a missile, and he keeps blowing up.
Yeah.
Like that was an insane sequence. Like they blew up a 747.
Yes, that was amazing.
Like legit explosion.
Yeah.
And Have you gotten to a point now where you're writing an episode of Workaholics where you're like, where you write something like that, some sort of action
There's
sequence
nothing you
where
can't
you go like
execute,
you go like,
right?
Oh, like they're not going to agree to this.
There's always a budgetary thing.
Yeah.
And some episodes we know are bigger than others, but we try to have one or two like sort of out in the world chases. The network calls them romps. We try to have a romp.
And, that sounds like such a, like a 1920s radio announcer, like, me and the missus are going to go out for quite a romp this afternoon.
Exactly.
Like,
that's what it sounds like to us, too. And but we do it. And, those are really fun apps. Those are the best. And then on House Party, we just try to beat the hell out of Adam in every episode.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's fun.
It's really good.
Wait, but we're writing for the Jack Black one. Which one was that one?
That was called
for?
Gramps to Mamp is Dead. And it's Adam's grandfather dies.
Right.
And Jack Black plays his dad.
Right.
And then the family, a rich woman married into the family and kind of took over the family pizza business and wants to give him a really nice funeral and up church. And that Adam hates that. And so does his dad, Pritchard. So they decide to sabotage that and do what Gramps to Mamps wanted, which was burn his body in a pizza oven and scatter his ashes over a park. So we burn his body in the pizza oven and we hooked Adam up to a parasailing thing, and then he flies up in the air and gets dragged behind, and then the bag of his ashes dumps out on the whole family, who the Demamps remember who they are, and party and sling their tits out and have the best time, and then the Offspring's song Bad Habit plays and they mosh.
What?
So that's a good app.
Oh my God. You totally stole that from my dream.
I know, exactly.
Like, that's insane.
Exactly.
When you know you're writing for like Jack, is that like extra excitement or pressure or like just so pumped?
That was great because that one was like, well, who's going to play Adam's dad? And then Jack's young enough where we were like, there's a twist at the end. And but yeah, it's so fun because it's the same thing for writing with those dudes. Is like you get them close, you write the best you can, and then you'll see what they do in the show when you actually watch it, and they've improved. Like they'll improvise in a way that you're like, God, they're making me look really funny.
Yeah, I was going to ask because those guys are such great improvisers, and they have that. Do you have that? Do you have that ego where you're like, no, I wrote these words.
Yeah, because you're such a good writer.
These words.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, you have to. Like, I mean, if they are like, it's easy to have that ego, and if they're making your shit better, you're like, well, fucking, my shit was just fine. Like, why?
No, that's the difference. Well, some people do. I don't have that at all.
You don't?
Like, I'm grateful for the job, and I'm not kissing butt. Like, no. I actually just love that job.
Yeah.
And then, it's like the whole idea of a writing room, and then those guys are in the writer's room all the time. Like, the whole writing time we're in there, which is pretty rare for creators and actors and everybody and directing. And so for me, I feel like they're part of the writing process. You can't really get mad if anybody takes your jokes in the writer's room. I think the way to say it is, like, you're flattered when they use a lot of your stuff.
Yeah.
But you're not pissed off when they, they follow your story. They follow the main beats. But, you know, sometimes they'll just get a thing. In Beer Heist, there's a croquet scene that opens the episode, and they just sung some song where Adam's just shaking his pants and his dick. And they're just, like, freestyling a song like he shakes his dick and he shakes his pants and his nose dick slanging or something like that. And I didn't write that. But when I watched it, that was the first shot you see. And I was like, yeah, that's better, though. That's better than what I wrote. Like, I was laughing. I was like, that's so silly. And
oh, good.
But yeah, see, that is so rare. And Brandon, we're talking about this earlier. And I think that's why everybody wants to work with you is because, and it's rare to have that selfless mentality where, and we're both curious about this, too, because, you know, and you coming up in comedy and knowing how funny you are, it's like to just be like, yeah, I just want to make you look good is a rare thing.
But it's so fun because I can work with both of you guys. I can work with I get to, you guys have to be yourselves on stage. Like if two stand-ups go on stage, it's almost always a terrible thing.
Yeah.
So, but I can like, you and I can work on a project and I can write in your voice and then I can go on and write with Whitney or I can write with Nikki Glaser. Or I can write with whoever I want, Kristen Shaw, all people with very different comedy.
Yeah. And you mentioned all those names because that's who you've written.
Yeah. Those are all people I've worked for in the last couple of years.
And how do you get to know, like, I mean, is there like a process, like if somebody is trying to do what you do, like to get to know somebody's voice? I mean, it's, and also in the balance of like, then getting to, like, you know, you probably don't want to sit down with a comic and say like, I think this is what you are, or do you?
No. Usually I help them more with story, and they'll, you know, the thing is like when you're in a community, as you guys are, say you're at the store, I don't know, maybe five nights a week or whatever you guys are doing. It's like there, you start to hear patterns even among your friends. Like there was always that thing with the Comedy Cellar guys where they start to sound the same even when they would talk.
Yeah.
They would,
just because that's what they're around.
It would be like Colin Quinn and Bill Burr and all those guys. Like you would hear them on TV and they all kind of sound like a dummy. Like it's all that sort
of
Louis, all those guys sort of. And you, it's the same thing with like when they're coming up with ideas, you're like, oh, that's a cool idea. And then so I just try to help them filter out the bad ideas, try to get to the idea that they're most excited about. And then I do the heavy lifting of like the boring stuff. I do the boring stuff like writing out the pitches and the one sheets and the outlines and like, and then we go through it together. But
and paying attention to not just their onstage persona, but their offstage, right?
Like the only reason I have any career at all is because I'll go out and drink with people and not talk about comedy. I'll just go out and like kick it with them, and then
being a cool dude that's fun to be around. Oh hell yeah,
I hope so.
Where are those guys at?
That's rare
in this
it's not a ton of them, but that's the whole thing. So like I like the analogy I use the most is just a dumb sports analogy. Like I have no problem being John Stockton to somebody else's Karl Malone. I have no problem at all.
I love that.
That's the name of your autobiography. Yeah. I am John Stockton.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
nobody would know. Nobody knows what John Stockton looks like.
But one thing I love about sports is that we could get, and that perfectly exemplifies this.
Yeah.
Because as stand-up comics, we like getting the laugh. We like getting the applause. So you came from comedy. So do you ever have those moments where you're like, oh, I wish I could be saying that line?
No, I used to. Up until I stopped comedy early, like at 20 or 21, I was just like, okay. Because I didn't know what it would have become. I just thought it was going to be like a rogue club guy, and I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
I just didn't want that at all.
Did you know what that life was from hearing, or just you just assumed it was not great?
You know, because I assumed it was not great, but also I knew it from like watching clubs, and like there was the one place in West Springfield, called the Hokey Lau or whatever.
Still there.
Yeah. So
Dave Attell shot his most recent special there.
I saw that, and I saw like Jeff Dunham there when I was in college, and like, I was just like, this is not for me. Like, this just isn't for me. So I kind of saw enough of that world where you'd be like, oh, this is a destination night. It's the two drink thing. It's like the waitresses. And I love being in the audience, but I just didn't want it. So at some point early on, I didn't want to. And also, like, I came up in Brooklyn as a comic from, like, I mean, excuse me, just like a writer from like 23 on.
Yeah.
I was there for 8 years.
And back when Brooklyn was shitty.
Yeah.
Not the gentrified paradise as it is today.
It got nicer every year. Like, even when I went, I never got mugged. I never had any problems.
Yeah, but
like, I was watching all the alt comics, like all the, you know, the alt comics. And they were 25 to 30. And if I had known that existed, I would have stayed with comedy. But I didn't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If I knew that there were backroom coffee shop.
And who would you in those rooms? Is that where you met Kurt?
Kurt Brownoler, Kristen Schaal, John Mulaney, Chelsea Peretti. I used to work the door at her show called Variety Shack for like 4 years.
Wow.
Kurt and Kristen, I worked their show as a plant or selling t-shirts or hanging out or whatever for years.
Here's what I love, though, is you're not just in the world of comedy. You're a fan of it.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah, you're a fan of – like you – I feel like you would be going to these shows and doing all this stuff even if you didn't have a job in comedy. You would still just be doing this.
That's right, and that's what I did back then because I didn't know. Like, I'm from Maryland. I have no connections at all. I didn't have a famous uncle or whatever. I didn't have any connections.
I read somewhere you actually got into college as pre-med.
I applied and got in as pre-med. My mom just turned and was like, you don't have to do that if you don't want.
Whoa.
And I was like,
what's your mom's name?
Mary.
Mary.
Mary. Good job.
Wow. Thank you.
Good job, Mary.
I know. Thank you. Thank you. Because I didn't want to do it anyway.
Or I don't know. You could have been the greatest doctor ever and we've all been deprived.
No, I would have been like a shitty Patch Adams.
And that's saying something.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Right. I would have entertained him and then he would have passed away.
Well, we call him a hospice doctor.
He had the flu. Why didn't you treat that? No, I was busy juggling.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So that's amazing because I mean, I was a year away from graduating college and then discovered stand up and was like, nah, I'm not gonna do this. I'm gonna drop out and do stand up. And that was the fights that I was having constantly with my family about. Which, by the way, are good fights to have. What do you think your mom did she just know that you weren't going to be happy doing that?
No, I think she just was nice. I think she was just cool and I think she thought I was funny and she just was like, you should just do TV. But I think by that she meant being like an ESPN Sports Center guy or something like a weatherman. I'm serious. Sure. Like, I don't think it was like
my mom also threw the weatherman thing in there, which I guess we had to have both had weathermen who were charming enough or kind of funny.
Maybe they knew about
Scott
David.
Van Buren, I think, was ours.
I had Steve Poole.
Oh, yeah. We also had Turk.
You guys your guys' weathermen don't even have weather in their name. Dallas Rains, motherfucker.
Oh, right.
Dallas Rains.
That's great.
His last name is Rains.
That's so good.
And he's a weatherman.
But also, let's be honest.
That's awesome.
Come on.
How was Bob Turk? Was he the man?
Yeah, they did a cover of the Temptations, My Girl, but instead of My Girl, they said Bob Turk. And
Bob Turk. Bob Turk.
I thought you were about to say he was on the cover of Rolling Stone.
Yeah,
he was cool. We had this one guy named Marty Bass. I bet he's still alive. He's probably a fan of the podcast. And I was riding down this escalator once in this mall in my hometown, and you know they're like local celebrities. A news guy to us is like, "Oh,
I saw Steve Poole at the aquarium when I was 12 and lost my fucking mind."
And they carry this little black and white headshot with their name on there, and they're just like,
"Yeah."
But then, so he's coming up, and I'm with my three friends, and my one friend's like, "Oh my god, that's Marty Bass."
And Marty Bass.
So he's coming up, and his back's to us a little bit, and we're like four.
That sweet Bass
eight,
back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You saw that. You recognize that. And from pointing at all those clouds. And so he gets right near us, and my friend goes, "Hey, Marty Bass." And before he can get Bass out, Marty Bass spins on his heel, points at us with both fingers, and goes, "I'm the Bassarino." And then.
What the fuck? And he had that chambered?
He had it ready. And
oh, my
by himself.
God.
And then, all we could do was just watch him go up the escalator as we were going down.
You're watching Marty Bass essentially ascend to heaven because that was such an awesome moment.
God took him. He goes, "It ain't getting cooler."
No, it was probably the greatest moment of his life. It was the greatest moment of my life, but for him too. And he just cruised on up, didn't smile, didn't wave.
He probably heard your footsteps from like miles away, and as soon as he felt
Bassarino.
I'm the Bassarino. Like, but spun a quarter's bin, pointed at us, said it, turned back around, and just cruised up.
You think he'd done that before?
He must have.
I mean, because that's a move for him. Because like the Bassarino sounds like a 9 foot long sandwich that some guy named Bass names at his restaurant because he's an egomaniacal asshole. He's like, right. You ate the large pizza, but can you eat the Bassarino? That's what that sounds like.
It really does.
Just had that on the ready. What is it about Weathermen where it's like, maybe because they're the only guys that don't have to be like, hey, a child was murdered last night, and police don't have any suspects.
Well, the weather is almost the saving grace of the news, because it is like, that's why even when it's like, it's going to be cloudy and rainy again, but I don't know if the sun's coming just around. Like, they're like, hey.
It's optimism.
But also, let's be honest, the charming weatherman is like kind of on the way out, because, I mean, hot. It's now it's all like, insert sex into the weather. Like,
It's hot. Now it's just hot chicks and apps.
Yeah.
That's all we have.
Well, now that's
weather.
It.
That's true, because I think all news anchors, because of the internet, I'm sure they... the people that watch local news have got to be 70 years old. It's not a... I mean, out here, people watch it. There's a guy in New York, or maybe he's out here now, Sam Champion. You guys know him?
I mean, that sounds like a great name.
I mean...
I know two people that got married because they went on double date. They went with another person, so it was four people, and then these two got married because they just were laughing so hard about Sam Champion and having that in common that 3 years later they got married. But
did they write Sam Champion to perform the wedding?
They said it in their vows.
Well, Sam Champion, that seems like the greatest porn star name of all time. But also, that you mentioned, what did you say earlier about the thing you bonded with the girl about the kid who wore shirts?
Yeah.
That is such a, like, especially between people, but trying to build rapport with, like, a girl, too. Like, that type of shit is so specific and says a lot, too, I think, about, like, how seriously you take yourself in life.
Sure.
If you can, like, find something that specific and laugh at it. But they got fucking married over it?
Yeah, I mean, that was the kickoff. That was the first joke. And I think it's, like, I think it's you also recognize people, that might be what like a real sense of humor is like they both realize that Sam Champion is a funny name,
right?
And
absurd thing.
And like weird, he's kind of a weird guy. So
like, are there for you, are there like deal breakers in with people as far as like being like, oh, like guy, you're maybe a great comedic mind or somebody that would be cool to work with, but you just don't, like, do they have to be on a certain level of...
Yeah, there are. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of things I wouldn't. There are a lot of types of comics. Like, I've never written fat jokes. I don't write race jokes. I don't like, I mean, that doesn't mean like we'll like hint at it. I've written on shows that have to do like monologues and stuff. And so you'll put like smart stuff in there. But anything that's just negative, negative comics are like, I mean, negative comedy is way funnier and easier to write sometimes. But I just don't go after people that are assholes. Like, I think, Adam, you know more of the people I work with, but overall I would say they're also nice people when they're not on stage.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the more important requirement to me.
Yeah.
Well, which is rare for this business, I think.
Yeah. That, and you're going to be writing with them, and especially when you do something where it's like deciding on the best joke.
Yeah.
Because I think we've all been in rooms where people are deciding which joke they're going to use, and if one dude's an asshole... That's not a pleasant experience, and you have to really be able to take your ego out of it. It's not when someone picks one joke over yours, it's not them saying you, Scotty, are a dick.
Right.
They're not saying that. They're like, hey, that joke may be better. Yours good. That might be better, but we'll use another one of your jokes because you'll write a good joke.
It's a team.
Something.
It really is teamwork, and it's like what makes a band tick. Like, even if the band doesn't necessarily hang out after the show, like as long as when they're together, they respect each other. And I think writers' rooms are like that, and I think comedy clubs are like that. Like, when you like somebody and you're excited they're there and you want to hang out afterwards, great. But there are comics I'm sure you guys can't stand that even when they're there, you'd bring them up like they're the funniest person that's ever been.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think it's just being a good employee, but people in this business are like so in it for themselves that they forget like that it is kind of like high tide raises all ships type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Peter Dinklage just hosted SNL, and people were telling me like, oh, don't you hate that? I was like, well, yeah, but I wanted him to do really well because I know that if he does well, then people are like, well, dwarves can be funny.
Yeah,
but, like when they talk.
Absolutely.
Like, not so. Oh shit. Okay. Well, let's find our own funny dwarf that can talk.
Yeah.
Right.
And then So I wasn't like wanting him to fail or anything like that. That part of this business really does kind of boggle my mind. Where everyone's like, well, no, I want everyone else to suck. why?
Yeah.
If everyone else sucks, they're not just going to come to you because so you want to be the last resort?
Yeah. I think it's so hard early on, especially. Like, once you're doing some stuff, it gets so much easier. But I understand why people are, like, envious early on or, like, a little jealous or, like, you know, but it all kind of irons out. It's just, like, people are so short-sighted in those emotions. It's like, if you give it 5 years, I bet that asshole is gone. Sometimes not. Sometimes they become the biggest, most popular. But overall, like, if you can just broaden what it is, like how long things take, it does kind of even out.
When you came out here, did you always have this like very just positive glass half full approach and nice guy attitude? I mean, we talked about it. I know you have, but like, I mean, Brad wrote something down that you had $400 to your name when you got your first writing gig.
That's true. And I was making, I might have had less, but I was a waiter at Two Boots in Brooklyn.
Two Boots.
Yeah, not like a...
Nice.
It was the restaurant one. There was like one restaurant one. So it was a family restaurant in Park Slope. And they had a really hard time keeping male waiters, male servers in there because there was so many kids and so many women that most of the guys would just not be able to handle it. Oh, true. Wow. So there was like this older gentleman named Eben who was such a nice dude. And there's this guy named Sumo and myself. And we were like the only three guys that could like handle it. So... I was waiting, and I got my first job, and then it was like I got a call, and it was for 8 weeks for $1,600 a week. And at the time, I was probably making like $300 and $400 in tips because I was trying to take off to go to every show. Like I didn't work every night because I, you know, I could have gone for the money, but instead I was going to all these $5 shows, these free shows, because I believed like Kristen Schaal was going to make it. Period. Like I was like, she is so funny
because you knew her for a while,
11 years now.
Yeah. You knew her before or as she started?
I knew her way before Concords. I knew her before her half hour. I'm actually in her half hour. I play her boyfriend. She brings me up on stage and sings me happy birthday with the whole audience and then asks me to marry her and I say no. And then the whole crowd gets mad at me. And that was a bit we had done in New York at alt shows for like maybe a year and a half before that.
So you'd be a plant.
I was a plant in a lot of stuff those guys did.
But where did you see her first that you, and then what was the conversation to just start that, like you started showing, you're like, I want to be friends with you. You're going to be awesome.
You know, that's funny because I've only done that once and it was with her.
For real?
I swear to God. Wow. And I'd been in New York for 2 months and I'd gotten a job as a sound PA on Stella, which was a Comedy Central show with Michael and Black.
Come on.
And And on that, there was an actress named Andrea Rosen who did stand up. I think she still might, but she definitely did back then. And she was like, hey, come to this thing. It's called Hot Tub, which is Kurt and Kristen's show. And it was their second one. And I went, and I was so, like, for the first time ever since, like, 16, I was like, didn't feel alone in the universe. I was like, these guys are so, I was like, they're the funniest. And it made me, like, nervous. It made me jealous because I was like, oh, if I don't befriend these people, I won't ever make it.
Wow.
Like, I was like, those are the first two people that I was like, their comedy is so similar to mine. So I just hung out.
Scotty, that's crazy. Wait. Not feel alone. So, like, just where you were like, oh, this is the world I'm, like, it just gave you such a concrete.
Yeah. Like, in high school, like, I got along with everybody. I think I was pretty popular and, you know, did stuff, but I just was like, I just felt so weird. Like, I felt so different. And that's why I went to UMass, because I didn't know anybody else that was going there. And even there, I was like, they didn't know. I mean, I sound now a little more Southern, but I used to sound very Baltimore. And then I didn't even know I had an accent until I went there. But they just looked at me like I was... My first day of class, my first class ever for college was in my building. So in the dorm room, they had classrooms, because it's a 22-story building. So I go down like 10 floors, first college class. I think it was like college writing. And I sit down, and the girl sitting next to me is named Kate Landers, and my sister's name is Kate Landis.
Okay.
So I was like, hey, that's my – all I said was, that's funny. That's my sister's name. Mine, the last name is Landis. And she just turns and she goes, where the fuck are you from? You sound like Forrest Gump. I was like, oh, shit. I made a huge mistake.
Oh, no.
I should have gone to Delaware. Like,
been with other people that sound like me.
Just nice people. Just mid-Atlantic sweethearts.
Maryland folks.
People who love that you sound like Gump.
Yeah. But it trimmed it out of me pretty quick. Then they'd be like, Scotty, say all these words. And I'm like, oh, yeah, turn the light on. Like, hand me that Coke. Oh, what's your phone number? I'll call you later. And people, that's how I used to sound. I have one voicemail, like, on a cassette, like a answering machine. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, hey, you know, thanks for calling, Scott. I can't get back to you right now, but I'll call you back in a little bit. Like, it's so amazing. Trashy. I have Maryland pride, but that's bad.
That's fucking amazing. Cause that's one of those states where, so like, if everyone out here or from the South, like, we don't picture, you can't picture, like, when someone says they have a Maryland accent, nothing really, like, pops into your head, but then you hear it, you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
It's a little different than Philly. Delaware is the same one. Like, I was just at NASCAR, like, 2 weeks ago out here at Fontana, and they were like, oh, have you ever been there? And this one guy's like, oh, yeah, we race Dover all the time.
And you're like, my people.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I know you.
There really is like a, like, almost like a person or character from, like, that represents every accent from a region, like Bobby's World. Like, that's, that mom is from what?
Minnesota.
Minnesota, yeah, North Dakota.
That made me, things, yeah. That introduced me to that, like, the way people talk there.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I guess, Rocky Philly, right? Like, with that.
A little bit. I mean, his is so weird. Yeah, his is all over the place.
Yeah, it's a fake accent. Good. That's not how he talks at all.
That's how he talks.
No, it's not.
That's what me and Adrian, you know, we going out there and we're going to fight Apollo. And Apollo was like, I'm going to take him out. And I was like, you
it's
know,
not that bad.
It's not that bad.
The second time I did stand-up was at a bar in Northampton, Massachusetts. And the guy that went on before me, we did like 4 minutes or 5 minutes. It was a pretty small mic. There are three or four people there. And his whole set was Arnold Schwarzenegger versus Sylvester Stallone playing tennis. And it was just... for the entire time. And
did
then
you
I
love it?
Go, oh, yeah. I mean, but I was also like,
now I know what my new closer is. Yeah. My God. I'm doing that.
And that's all. And he would just swing his right arm for Arnold and his left arm like he was hitting a ball, like forehand. And that's all he did for 4 minutes. And then he got like huge applause. Like the bartender gave him a shot. And then I go up there and I'm telling like, just not even jokes, just like talking, and then, you know, just sort of, like people were like, "Nah,
bring back the Arnold, tennis guy."
Yeah, just I know.
20 more minutes of that.
So,
yeah.
So when you went up to that is a great bit.
Up to Chris.
Well, real quick though, I want to say one of my first bits that I did when I because I did a few open mics in Seattle, then got to SC, did a few frat parties. So again, six times in, and I was like, "I'm a comic.
Yeah,
I'm ready to perform overseas on my dad's island and make him look bad." So then I stayed abroad in London and did some bars while I was doing the acting school out there, and one of the bits I would do was Arnold Schwarzenegger. He just became governor, and my whole thing was like, Arnold can do anything now. He could even fuck a cow if he wanted to. And then I would just act out him fucking a cow.
Yeah.
But for like
Lull.
3.5
Lull.
Hey, guess what, Brad? That's exactly what I did. And people
I don't know why you don't bring that back.
Dude, I would do, and then I would ask, and then I would like have the cow, towards the end of it, the cow would just speak up and be like, dude, like, enough.
Yeah.
Like, I would, you know. And,
I mean, I'm saying that's what you should close your special with.
No, well, maybe. So when you saw Kristen and Kurt,
yeah,
you were like, if I don't become friends with them,
I won't make it. I won't make it in comedy. Like, I wasn't going to, like, off myself. I wasn't alone. Like, I was like, I'm going to be a weird, like, hermit man.
But you saw, like, a world to attach yourself to.
Yep. All of a sudden, I saw people that I thought were funnier than I was, that I understood. And then I just thought that their chemistry was, I'd never seen anything like it. So I was with a friend of mine who was, like, this aspiring male model, straight dude, but just, like, everybody's young. Everybody's 23, and they're trying to do stuff.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I'm going to say something. And so I walked up to Kristen after the show with my buddy Anthony, and I was like, you're so funny. You're like, I've never seen anything like you. You're going to be great. And she was like, thank you. You know, she's still like so sweet.
Mm-hmm. She's and like, where's that accent from?
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, yeah, you fucking Forrest Gump. Yeah. And
same girl.
Exactly. And then that was kind of it. Like, and then I left, and then I kept running into them because we all just coincidentally, I would go to the show every Monday or Tuesday, whenever it was. But then also they lived on the F train, which in Brooklyn is like, you know, it's not the best one, it's not the worst one, but every once in a while I would see them. Mm-hmm. And
I was going to ask, how do you, like, if you're just, you could just seem like a fan slash, if you just keep coming and saying what up, like, you have to have an organic moment of to actually, unless they were receptive from the get-go.
No, they were nice from the get-go, but you're exactly right. And so what I did strategically was I took Kurt's level one improv with the goal of him thinking I was the funniest person he's ever taught.
Genius.
And so I probably was like the 30th funniest person he ever taught. But in that class, I stood out because it was a bunch of like commuters that were just like, I just want to be a better salesman.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He, after that, was like, you're really funny. Let's get beers afterwards. And then,
Game over.
They started inviting me to like cookouts and all that sort of thing, and that's like where I thrive. So I was like, as soon as I started to get socialized, but you know, everybody would ignore me because I was the only one that wasn't a stand-up, and everybody would be like, are you a stand-up? Like, and not even like, you know, shitty way, just like, you know, stand-up, like, hey, stand-ups, no stand-ups. You guys connect to each other in a way that's
well, you do have that vibe. You're quick, you're personable, you have like a point of view and a perspective about everything. You can talk about anything.
I hope so.
Yeah, and that is like what we, you know, that's a basis for a lot of what we do.
It's weird when I go to a gig that's off in the middle of nowhere and I don't know who the feature act is going to be.
Sure.
And I'm just watching people walk into the club. I can look at someone walk in, not have them say anything, and just go, oh, that's my feature act.
Yeah.
I can't describe to you
because he's crying in the corner and he's staring at Brad's headshot, going, one day
I'll be like the dwarf.
But there's an energy or something.
Yeah, there's just some sort of vibe. So that doesn't surprise me at all.
They were cool.
Thought you were stand up,
but then I would always be like, no. And then I just didn't want to step on anybody's toes, and I didn't want anybody to see me as competition. Mm-hmm. And so I would just tell them whatever my job actually was at that time. So if they're like, well, what do you do? I wouldn't be like, I'm an aspiring writer. I would be like, I'm a temp.
Why did you do that? Because
I don't know. I just thought
you wanted to assimilate and be a part of this, but not have anybody feel threatened.
I think I was like the way that anybody in comedy kind of can get angry about things that nobody else cares about.
Yeah.
I think in my mind, like multi-hyphenates were just driving me nuts. And when you're young and you're in New York or LA, it's like, I'm an actor. I'm also like a director. Like I have a great voice, but and I hated that. So my backlash, instead of going up on stage like you guys and doing it, was I'm never going to mention what I do. But then I was constantly writing on my own, like banging out just like tons of features, tons of scripts, like writing sketches for everybody, especially Kurt and Kristen and the Chelsea Pretty Variety Shack girls. Mm-hmm. They're four really funny girls. And then like 2 years later, 3 years later, people started to be like, you should do stuff. You should do comedy or whatever. And I was like, well, actually, I do write scripts. And then I started sending them to people and they liked them. And then they were like, oh. And then Kurt and Kristen were coming back from London one time. This is probably about 2.5 or 3 years after I had met them. I'd never written anything for them. But I had had a ton of stuff, but I'd never given it to them. And Kurt was like, yeah, Kristen was like on a later flight, and I got to write tonight's Hot Tub. They used to do three acts. They used to do it like a full show and then like a funny closer, and then they'd have three comics or four comics in between. So I wrote a couple, and then I sent it to Kurt, and he's like, what? And I was like, no, I wrote these for you guys. He's like, you did? And then he read it. He's like, we're going to use this one if you're okay with it. And then I couldn't go to that show because I think I had to work like as a server or valet or something. Yeah. And it crushed. And so then like 2 weeks later, they
hit you
again.
Up? I mean, that must have been a text or something. Like,
God, yeah. I don't even know if people were texting.
Email or
something. You talk to a person?
I know.
But I'm saying getting that news is like, that's got to be a big deal. Like, that's a turning point.
Yeah, but then because I'm so weird, I didn't even ask. So I just let it go. I was just like, let's just see. They'll tell me if it went well. And they were like, oh, it went so well, dude. We're going to do it again at this show. And then they did it again at one I was at and really did well. And then I gave them one other one and that also did well. And then like, I don't know, maybe 2 months after that, we're all just walking down after drinking some booze on 7th Avenue. And they're like, yeah, like we have this pilot thing. We want you to be our writer. We know we could have picked anybody, but we like you. So they were the ones that were like, without them, I might
have turned.
They
Sam Champion for you.
They were my Sam Champions.
that's amazing.
That's what it was. So I just sat on it for a really long time. And then once it started to open up, and then it was just like everywhere they went, I went.
Well, and here's one thing that I love about you describing how you kind of got to this point is I hear so many people that say they want to be a writer, but then I say, okay, so what are you working on now? They're like, well, I'm going to wait until someone asks me to write something. Yeah. Like, that's not going to happen.
No, it's a huge mistake.
No one's going to come up to you and say, wait, you've done absolutely nothing in this business? Write the screenplay.
Right.
Not going to happen.
Yeah.
You have to just write. And the same way my advice to young stand-ups is to say you just have to go on stage as frequently as you can.
It's true.
Doesn't matter what the venue is, just do it. Would you say the same thing to young writers? Like, just start writing things.
Yeah, anything. But it's like also kind of figure out, there was like a story, there's an old story about like Charles Barkley at like the rookie camp, and his mom calls him and he's like, how you doing? And he's like, I'm the best except for this one guy. And it was Michael Jordan. It's something like that.
It was
like
I was really hoping you were going to say it was Detlef Schrempf.
Yeah. It was
like a hidden,
was
like
the Flying Dutchman? Who's the Flying Dutchman?
Vladdy? No.
No. Chambers? No.
Serunas Marcellonis?
Tom Chambers? Flying Dutchman. Chandler? Crap.
I thought there was a Flying Dutchman. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Rick Smits?
Rick Smits.
Rick Smits was the Flying Dutchman.
Yeah,
Rick from Smits. Indiana Pacers.
But it was something like that. And it was just one of those things where I'm like, you got to kind of know who you are and who you should be working with and who you should be writing for. Like,
yeah.
And what your voice is. But like, So I would write a horror movie because I love horror movies, and I write a comedy. And then I would write a horror and a comedy. And then, you know, I look back at them, and in the first three, there's probably nothing usable. But then they started getting a little better, and I never read a book. I didn't have final draft. I used to just write on Word or by hand and then type it in. I had this one buddy that was, like, nice enough. They would format it sometimes.
So no, you had no basis for, like, structure or
never read
story?
A movie script before. So what I did is I would watch Jaws, and I would pause it every time a scene would change, and I would write what happened in that scene, and then in my movie I would do something very similar for horror or comedy. So
you would essentially write different versions of Jaws.
Yes. My first two movies are basically Jaws.
Huh.
But it taught me at least, like, what, you know, without knowing any of the terms or the words, it was like, oh, that's like... That's how you learn when this character's introduced. When Hooper comes to the island, there's the B story gets launched, and you're like, but I didn't know what a B story was, but I knew I'd introduce a new guy right there. So I did.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
But so then you just kind of took that structure, but then made it your own story. But
right.
I could see how that, because, yeah, people when they start, kind of like you, they don't know what the B structure, like, they don't know those terms, they don't know what they mean, they don't know what that about character development, like, they don't know. So yeah, take one of the greatest movies of all time,
yeah,
just follow that structure.
Yes, the story, I knew that was a great story, and
yeah.
I knew, like, the very basics of writing, where it was like man versus man versus himself, man versus nature. I was like, that has all three, so mm-hmm. I'm going to focus on this and teach myself how to write off that. But then I probably had four or five TV jobs in New York that I still didn't know how to write script, because they were like non-scripted or prank shows or...
Yeah, Jeff, Money from Strangers, right?
Yeah, two seasons of Money from Strangers. I hired Kurt on that, and
yep.
this great writer named Albertina Rizzo. And but those were like, I didn't know how to write. I didn't have final draft back then. I didn't know how to write scripts. And then I had like a strange panic attack at like 29 or so. So like, I was in the guild. I had an agent. I had a lawyer.
Did anybody know that you had never, like, your experience was...
That I had only just made it up as I went.
Yeah.
Like, and so I freaked out. I was still in New York, and I think, God, I don't even remember what show I watched, but I was like, I'd really like to write on that. It was probably Eastbound or something. And so I just wrote to a friend that was out here for pilot season. I was like, can you bring me every pilot? And then and I bought like four writing for TV books. And then I literally for 3 weeks just read all the books, read all the scripts, noted out all the scripts, and was like, got it. Like, I saw the formula. Like, all of a sudden. So I basically did like grad school on my own, and then wrote a workaholic spec and an original. And then that original was like what got me most of my jobs.
Holy shit. Wait, so... I love, by the way, that was your spec script. You had no idea that you were eventually going to be ingrained in that world and be...
No, and I didn't know... I hadn't seen one episode of Workaholics, but I knew I could write for young guys. So I was like... Because I usually wrote for women. Like, coming up in New York, I was writing Kristen... I was writing for girls more than guys. And
why?
Out here, I don't know, they like having me around more.
Yeah.
Less competitive. Because I'm incredibly good looking and I got animal shirts.
Yeah, because I have funny shirts. I'd bathe regularly. Yeah.
Less competitive, yeah.
Yeah, it was less competitive. Because, like, if I show up... I mean, I don't even have an example in New York, but, like, they're... You have your crews, you have your people, but like sometimes you're like, this person is a little bit different than me, but I like what's going on. If we combine our forces, we're powerful.
Dudes are also weird about new dudes, you know?
Yeah, especially in comedy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. New dude? Who's that new dude?
Yeah.
Like, is he going to fucking take my shit, or is he like...
So, and I was like, and you know that thing when people are like, you got to watch Sonny, you're going to love it. You got to watch Broad City, you're going to love it. And the more people tell you're going to love it, you know it. You're like, fuck you. You're like, I'm going to hate it. Like, I can't describe what that is either.
Or that's reverse psychology maybe, but just something to where I get it all the time when some people try to write jokes for me, but they're very sort of surface dwarf jokes, and I'm like, no.
Right, or somebody will go, like, there's this other guy that you got to check out, you're going to love him, and you're like, wait. Like, it's almost like, wait and let me discover it. I don't know what it is.
Oh, that's probably a lot of the reasons why I don't click on some of the viral videos that I see, like, that, like, go through a Facebook news feed that, like, everyone's reposting. I'll almost, like, I didn't watch Two Girls, One Cup until like a year later.
Yeah. No, me too.
Because I was like, oh, fucking, you know, hey, ease up, society. Like, I'll decide when I'm going to watch this and if it's worth watching and buying the soundtrack too.
Yeah, I would never do that. And there's like something that's like, if you're on the side of the majority, it's like, that's when you need to pause and take a breath. And like, that's like a great way to be like, oh, everybody loves it. Okay. Like, hold on one second.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're right. Sometimes it's the best thing ever.
What's a flip? Yeah.
But
Two Girls, One Cup is a great example.
Yeah, and I felt bad. that I waited that long. I felt bad that.
I mean, best video ever, right? I mean, yeah. Can we agree that that should have won the Emmy for best stunt work in a comedy?
So,
yeah. I laughed a lot.
That was the first viral video I ever had. Not Two Girls One Cup, but I made a Kermit the Frog reaction video to Two Girls One Cup, and Perez Hilton featured it, and it got 6 million views in a week.
That's cool.
And then I.
And then
it was cool.
Someone told Sky to watch it. He was like, fuck no.
Yeah,
I'm not watching that. Like, tell me.
I can't describe what it was, but everybody was like, I think it was season two of Workaholics had come on. Everybody's like, Scott, you're going to love this. You're going to love this show. And I was like, I hated it. And then I saw the poster in the subway, and it was like the one where the guys are putting the keg on the water cooler at work. And like, I think Blake's got like a joint in his hand, and somebody's got like maybe Durs with panties out of his back pocket. And I was like, oh, what is this? The guy with the big hair is like the crazy caveman stoner guy, and the little guy can't like get laid. Yeah. And then that big guy is just every white. And then I watched it, and I was like, oh, it's so good. And I was so, it was like a relief.
Yeah.
And then I felt this weird thing, and I was dating a girl at the time, and she was like, do you like it? I was like, I love it. And I like went through a bunch of them. And she's like, yeah, those guys, you know, like, you should probably, like, try to work with them if you get out to L.A. And I was like, yeah. And then, like, I moved out here.
Like, Jesus.
I think, like, 4 months later, I was on Workaholics.
So this
4 months later in moving out here?
Yeah, I think so. I moved out here 3 years ago, and I worked on Whitney Cummings at a show called Love You Mean It.
Yep.
Which I loved working on, by the way. That was, like, a fun show. And, Adam was on it briefly with like Chris Lee and a couple of they were like guests on the sofa, and then his manager Isaac was like, hey, how long are you doing this show? And I'm like, they picked us up for 13, we've done 9, so maybe 4 more weeks or whatever. And he's like, Adam's got this thing, it's like a stand-up thing, we don't know what it is, let me know if you're available. And then that turned out to be House Party. Wow. And then we got canceled the next week on Love You Mean It. And then he was like, do you want to meet Divine? Like, they just wrapped season 3. He can meet you tonight. So I went to Old Smokehouse, which is where, you know, stuff happens. You eat orange garlic bread. You've been there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's been there.
Yeah, sure. It's a Hollywood standard.
But he didn't know what I look like because I'm just a writer. You know, like, he can't. And he just didn't Google me or whatever. And so I'm sitting there, and he's like 5 minutes late, and he like came in less looking like this tired honey bear. And like, and it was the last day of the episode where they did 20 episodes that season, so were smoked. I mean, he was done, and like his voice, you know, he loses his voice all the time. And so we sit down, and the reason I knew I was gonna like him is he's like, so let's get a drink, what are you drinking? I was like, I'll take a Maker's on the rocks. And he goes, not me, Bud Light. And I was like, oh, that's cool. He wasn't like, oh, that sounds good, like he was did his own thing. And then I think I made a Goldfinger, the band joke.
Well, that's you basically struck divine gold.
Exactly. Right. Without knowing.
Last time he was on the podcast, we talked about 90s punk bands for probably 22 minutes.
Oh, yeah. He loves to sing them, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. His joke of everything is always a
season.
A season and then a location. Like, it was summer, Chicago, in the city, Stephanie.
Yeah, we had one. Yeah, we wrote a couple episodes for House Party season 2 that we never shot, and he was going to be in a pop punk band, and we got Mark Hoppus. Mark Hoppus was like, yeah, reach out to my manager, I'll be in it. And we were going to call them the Sugar Rush Kids.
I like it.
And it was at Omaha. Divine had that band. But any farts. So it was like,
when you guys met, because, you know, to this day, like, when I'm around you guys, I'm like, you guys seem like blood, like, you can finish each other's sentences.
It was weird. You were there on House Party. That was the second time or third time I'd ever been around Adam when you came in that day.
To kind of help,
just
like,
to be, help
shoot
write,
the shit.
Shoot the shit. And you thought that we had known each other for, and that was the third day we had ever been around each other.
Are you serious?
I'm totally serious.
Dude, so they bring me in like to just kind of like be another like fly on the wall and like, you know, spitball ideas and laugh and listen to whatever. And I'm watching, and the whole time, I mean, I'm like, I had no idea.
Yeah, because you knew him, but you didn't know me.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, is
but
this
the way
like
you guys talked and worked, and like the way that he would spit something out and then you would tag it and then he would make him, or that you would suggest and then he would like take it and run with it. It was like a seamless. And what I would anticipate every writer's room you want it to be, right? Where it's just.
But it was rare. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. But it was like. But then to get on Workaholics, like, they were, you know, I had written the season with Adam, and then they were like, okay, we'll interview him. But the showrunner of the show, I think, was concerned that I was going to be like a Brooklyn cynical, because I came up in that scene, that I might not be good for the show in certain ways. And then it just turns out it's like. No, that wasn't the case, but it was just where it came up. So it's like, you never know. You got to overcome weird shit all the time. But
at what point did you have when you like stepped into like, I don't know, the Workaholics, like writer's room for the first day or any of that? Did you have a flashback of like writing that spec? I mean,
Yeah, I mean, I wrote two, and I wrote two workaholic specs because, again, I would, like, watch the episode and, like, paste it out. But I had, like, Wayman speaking. Like, I hadn't watched enough episodes. So, like, I broke all these rules. I wrote a thing for Jet Set, but he had died by that point. So, it's like, I was sending in some really uninformed shit.
Wow.
And but that those specs didn't get me. I mean, honestly, Workaholics got me. House Party got me Workaholics. Yeah. Like, I don't think I even sent in an original for that one. But,
I mean, just like, you know, fantasizing at one point about. I mean, that's crazy that you.
Yeah, it was really weird. It was within. I think it was like I moved out in end of November, and I think I started on House Party like January 1st, and then by that point it just took off. Like I knew I. I took, yeah, I knew I was going to get Workaholics if I did House Party.
What do you think you attribute to, like, I mean, writing that spec, making the move out here, timing, first of all, is a big step. Timing has a lot to do with it. But, I mean, also, like, you doing the Whitney show and, like, whatever you did on that show made, you know, Isaac ask you, right? I mean, like,
I mean, Isaac knew me because he used to rep Kurt and Kristen, too. So I was around in New York for years and years.
Yeah.
But I think it was that plan of, like, being friends with so many people that if Adam goes, yeah, I might hire this dude Scotty, and then Whitney goes, I love him. And then you go, oh, shit. So, like, people do your PR for you.
Yeah.
If
you're a good dude.
And so far, so it's luck and it's
timing. People don't PR piece of shits.
No, because it makes you look really bad. Like that,
right.
Yeah, that's like the one thing that, like, you'll recommend somebody for certain jobs, and you won't recommend other people for certain jobs. And then there's some people, if I go like,
100%,
what do you think of Adam? You go, hire. If you don't, you're making a mistake. And that's when showrunners and stuff go like, okay, like, bring this dude in.
Because if somebody just says like, yeah, he's cool.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, well,
you're like, what do you think of so-and-so as a writer? And I'll be like, if you don't hire her, you're a fool. And then they're like, all I need to hear. And then, you know.
Because they know that you're sticking your neck out for this person, and it's your reputation.
Yes.
It's not like an agent or a manager that has some sort of stake in the game of their success.
Yes.
You have nothing with recommending a friend for a part or a writer for a position. You're just like, no, I just want your project to be good. And because I want your project to be good, I'm going to give you someone who else who is good
and
to help your project.
It's any work. It's like you wouldn't recommend your buddy for a construction job if you were like, oh, yeah, he throws his back out every week. Like, it's if they got the goods, you hire them.
Yeah. What was your favorite? We got about 7-10 more minutes. Is that good?
Whatever you guys want.
What was your favorite part and of Hawaii House Party?
Oh, yeah.
And just like, had you, I mean, obviously New Orleans was bananas, but like a show like that, I feel like is probably different than anything you've ever worked on. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the best. And it's to the point where like I'm already pitching shows that take place on the North Shore again, because that was, I mean, you were there. Yeah. It was like the thing that worked was the weather worked for us. That could have really, really screwed us. So we had great luck with that. But like, and you shot at Turtle Bay too, right?
I shot something. Yeah, but it wasn't House Party. It was something different. But yeah, it's the most amazing thing ever. It's just like, oh, wow.
Everything
should be shot here. You wonder why certain movies, TV shows are like, whoa, and then we have a Hawaii episode. Yeah, because we all want to go to Hawaii.
Yeah.
That's why, because it's awesome.
And then when you see it, you're like, yeah, this is why. So like my favorite part was so we were all in the same resort, all the production crew, and it's mostly Workaholics people.
Yeah.
But my favorite part, every single season, even the season you were on in LA, where it's like we bust people up to Chatsworth.
That was a great season.
I know.
Two SNL cast members on my episode.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, just on your episode.
Yeah, Brooks and Pete.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
I'm waiting for the call, Lorne.
The Blue Angels.
The Blue Angels.
But yeah, I only like the new faces, and I like the way that they come off the plane or the bus or whatever, and they're just like, I've never done TV. I'm thrilled. They're nervous. I mean, they're so nervous. And not just stand-up. Like, you guys got stand-up down. Like, if I'm like, I need you to do 8 minutes, great. I need you to do 20, great. You guys know what you're doing there, but acting is scary for people.
Yeah. But that's one of the things that makes the show great is you don't just see the comics on stage doing their stage persona.
Right.
Now you see them in a sketch. Now you see them interacting. Now you see them, like, you see them in other facets, which makes it a great show, not only for you guys, but then also for the comics, because they get to showcase a little bit more.
I would argue it's the most fun show for any new face comic ever.
1,000%.
I think it's so fun, and we party, you know, like we do party after the shows, and we're like, we make the whole vibe feel like you can't make a mistake. If you flub a line, there's no such thing as flubbing a line. Like, do your thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my favorite part every season, especially there, because we were flying like New York comics in the middle of the winter out to Hawaii, and they were like, I can't tell you, maybe out of the 30, there were probably 10 that were like, I never thought I would go to Hawaii my entire life. And then we're paying you.
Leonard Utz was one of those.
Leonard Utz is our dude.
Yeah, Leonard Utz.
We had him on the podcast a few months ago. He was just in love with that place.
Yeah.
I think he never... Yeah, he'd never been, right?
I don't think so. I mean, most hadn't. Like, one or two. I actually was kind of disappointed when people were like, yeah, I came here once. I was like, oh, that sucks.
Now you're not going to see their face, like, light up when they, like, feel the water for the first time. Like, it's warm?
Yeah, exactly.
What the hell?
I know. And we, so that part was great. The resort, Turtle Bay is the best.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just you've been on the show now 3 seasons. It's like, I love that crew and that team. And, and you know, we're getting better at
it. It's rare, right?
Too.
To have a crew that tight and
love
seamless.
Those guys.
Also, you and Adam at the helm is rare too, because like when you say, when some of the comics haven't acted before and they're nervous about just the whole experience, like their first TV, like not just stand up but acting too, you want to make sure that you're being represented like well, but you guys make everybody so comfortable.
That's
which I think is like, you know, you're giving them the best opportunity to succeed.
Yeah, and Kyle and Baby Newt, the directors, are really soft-handed directors too, where they get what they want. But if we can see somebody's weak spot right away, we'll work around it. So
and the parting aspect, dude, like is like that shit does help and make you more comfortable. Like in New Orleans, after these long days, I mean, I think a lot of comics would show up, and I think that's how it worked in general. They would show up like a day early, and then we all pretty much would go out every night. So even if it was like rage and burp, well, New Orleans was different because you couldn't not get fucked up every night.
Yeah.
I think there was maybe one night where I think you turn around and left at like 2, and I was like, Scotty, come on. You're like, man, I can't do it every night, like for a month every night. And then I was like, you're right.
I know. I look like that Nick Nolte mugshot. Like, there's a photo of me, like, walking down Frenchman, and, like, I look 40 pounds heavier, 20 years older, like, just bloodshot, like, blood vessels in the face. And I was like, I mean, honestly, if we had shot, we shoot 10 episodes in 10 days, which is unheard of. And if that shoot was longer, like, 4 weeks, in New Orleans, it would have been, like, legit trouble. Like, people would have had extreme illnesses.
That's so insane when you think of that atmosphere. Or compared to, let's say, when some comic would have to do Letterman,
right?
Where it's like, okay, like work with the guy, work with the 165-year-old writer to get your set right. You fly out. You're in a suit. Stand here. You're isolated in the green room. You don't meet Dave before.
Dave's not boozing with you.
Yeah. Dave's not going out the night before with you. And then you stand on your spot. We're cut to you in 3, 2, like that. All that adds to the pressure and adds to the fact that you're doing this late night spot. Yeah. Whereas you guys are just like, no, we're hanging out.
Yeah.
You're going to be comfortable, and you're going to be funny. It's going to be more like a club date.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a great time.
It's all been like those. It's such a pleasant surprise. Like, that show's just been great. And it's been a good team. I'm glad to be a part of it.
And you were saying, like, that world makes you, like, has opened your eyes up to doing one on the beach.
Yeah, man. So I'm going to, like, I'm just going to keep pitching stuff, especially there, because there's a huge tax credit to shoot there.
Oh, yeah.
Everything should be in Hawaii. Yeah,
well, I went ziplining there, which was you did other shit. You did the helicopter ride.
I did helicopter. I did, snorkeling, helicopter.
Did you swim with sharks?
I had a dune buggy for 2 weeks. I don't know if you remember that, but I had rented the dune buggy. So I drove around the island in an orange dune buggy.
Wait, what? I didn't know that you had it the whole time.
Yeah, no seatbelts. And so that was like my mode of transportation. I was like, don't get me a car. I'll just rent a dune buggy. So
that's the best.
Yeah, it was fun, man.
Oh, my God.
It was so good.
Yeah. Before I wrap up, I wanted to ask you something. First of all, everyone should follow you on Twitter because you're one of these writers that you post jokes.
Yeah.
And
that's nice.
It's great.
That's nice.
You do really funny stuff.
Thanks, man.
At Marilyn Mudflap.
It's true.
On Twitter. So don't look up Scotty Landis. At Marilyn Mudflap. But then your Instagram is Mudflap Scotty. Yep. What's with the Mudflap thing?
So that was just I used to date a girl from Mississippi, and I was at a I was in this town called Chunky, Mississippi. And,
wait, that's a name?
Yeah.
Sounds like
it's not a Campbell soup flavor?
Yeah. I was about to say the same thing. Like,
and then it was like, I was actually, the town was called Hickory. The town over from us called Chunky, and they're like, we used to do it in Chunky, now we're doing Hickory. So I was like, okay.
What a great sentence.
Yeah, I know. And so I was sitting there, and it was like a crawfish boil band weekend thing, and there was all these families getting together.
Like they do
a lot, and it also is so fun. And this guy walked by with a huge mullet, just like classic mullet. And, you know, mullet's like one of those words that's like, you've just heard it so many times, you're like, stop, like, we get it. We all can say mullet. So this guy goes, oh, you like that guy's hair? That's one hell of a Mississippi mudflap. And then kept walking. And I was like, Mississippi mudflap. That's really funny. And then I was laughing, and nobody else was laughing. And they're like, you've never heard that? And I was like, no. They're like, Kentucky waterfall? I'm like... No.
22.
And they just keep going. And I was just like, Jesus. Wow. So when I got back up, people were like, you should join Twitter. You might be good at Twitter. And I was like, fuck that. Same thing. Like, like population loves it. I'm against it.
Yep, yeah.
And then like 6 months later, I read like one tweet that actually made me laugh really hard. So I signed up.
I was that way with sex up until like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, no joke.
I was like, this is pretty great.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
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 If you open your eyes, it's amazing.
I gotta try that sometime.
But so then I just signed up as incognito, and I planned on never even putting Scotty on there. I just wanted it to be like I could just pitch jokes as this weird entity that nobody knew, and it worked. Like Rolling Stone once listed me as the 25 top Twitter followers
at the time. Shut the fuck up.
And they were like unknown, don't know where he works, but like here's some of his top tweets.
How did you find out?
Because they told me. They were like, they contacted me through Twitter. And they were like, do you mind sending us a picture? So I sent a picture from when I was in Mississippi of this day I was like noodling catfish and like scooping catfish out with
nets. God.
And it's me in cutoff shorts, like a super tight short shirt from this local fast food place called Ward's, a bandana. And then I blacked out my eyes and then put this huge blackout ball between my legs so it looks like I have like a 25-inch cock.
Oh, my God.
And that was on RollingStone.com. And like all these people were like, shit, dude.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wow. And then everyone's like, who's this Marilyn Mudflap? We got to follow him.
And then at some point, I put Scotty on there because I was like, I was getting so much work as a writer. I was working before that, but then I was in writer's room and the people were like, are you on Twitter? Or, like other writers? And at some point, I was like, yeah, I'm Marilyn Mudflap. It's Scotty. And then they're like, oh shit, that's you. Like it was fun. Yeah.
And yeah, like Patton Oswalt retweeted you a lot. And that's. I mean, talk about how you're a fan of the alt comedy scene. That's like God coming down from on high, I now bless you.
I know.
People must love you now.
It was that. It was, I had like 700 followers, and I was like, sick, crushing, got this.
Book deal.
Dude, come and get it. And then I woke up, the girl's dating at the time, like, shook me awake. She's like, hey, Patton Oswalt and Andy Richter and Michael McKean have been retweeting you. You have 25,000 followers. And then like, I woke up and I had like 25,000, or I think it was 12,000 overnight. And then
That's insane.
And then my email used to come to my Twitter alert used to come to my regular email. So I woke up to 12,000 emails. Then it just grew really fast. And then it just totally plateaued. And I've probably lost 2,000 or 3,000 followers. I think everybody has.
Yeah. Did when that happens, do you go like, oh shit, now I have a lot of pressure to write funny stuff?
I'm
just gonna do the same thing I've been doing.
You know, I didn't feel that really at all because I was already writing on TV shows. I was doing Money from Strangers at the time, I think.
Okay.
And so I'd done Mega Drive. I'd done a few other shows.
So like I'm writing. That's where my money comes in.
Yeah.
So Twitter's just fun.
Yes, but I did get like a lot of emails and stuff from like small publishers that were like, hey, we want to give you a book. What's an angle? Like, what's the deal? And so like. I didn't do any of it. I got a book agent out of that, but I never wrote anything.
Do you want to?
No. I love TV. I just want to do. I love doing movies now that's going in that direction. Yeah. But I love writing TV. That's all I want to do. Forever.
Would you ever want to do like a reboot of Married with Children, or do you think you can't do that because it was in a time where there was nothing like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I like new stuff. I don't even like to think about the stuff I did a year ago. So like I like to keep churning out new shit.
I have noticed that about you. You're like, yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Move on.
I think that's a good way to just do anything, but I it's also so you don't worry about anything anymore, cuz like as soon as you put something behind you, you're like, okay, it's done.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
You slide the plate away with you at dinner and you're like, okay, I'm going to push this to the table. I'm done.
Yeah.
And
what am I doing?
Yeah. You don't, but then you don't focus on that and try to rest on that. You try to move on to the next thing and create the next thing.
Sure.
And
I'm sure it's exciting for like you when you shoot your special that it's like, okay. Go back to work.
It's scary as shit when you shoot the special and they give you a date that it's airing like May 20th on Showtime. Just throwing that out there. Brad Williams' Daddy Issues premieres. And then I'm like, oh, fuck. I got to write a whole lot of new stuff.
That's great.
So people don't watch it, go, wow, that's really great. See them coming to their city, then come see me and see the same shit that they just saw in the special.
Yeah,
that's my worst fear. So
desperate for material.
Sure.
He called me in the middle of the night and goes, what was that 30 minutes you did on your dad's island? Can I use that?
Yeah.
And I was like, I would not. Wish that upon anybody.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good one.
Taking the Arnold Cow joke.
You can have it.
That's my opener.
I'll give you $50 if you open and close with that.
I might at some show. I might have to do that because that just sounds really funny to me. So yes.
Well, and I'll tell you this: it was funny to a lot of people.
All right. Well,
7 years ago.
All right.
So I don't know why you're.
All right. I mean, yeah, that's one thing if a new comic out in some island somewhere does it, but now Arnold Schwarzenegger, look out, because yeah, you might be plugging a war game on your iPhone, but now people are going to know you. People are going to know you for fucking a cow very soon.
All right, but hold up, bro. What did you say about him plugging a war game?
Yeah, there's
Super
an app.
Bowl commercial, right?
Yeah,
like, yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger does a commercial for I don't want to say the name of the app, but it's a war video game. That's an app on your phone.
Scott, I feel like you could get in the commercial game.
Would love it.
Yeah, sure.
I would love it.
Write like 30 seconds with two punchlines, get paid six figures.
I would love to do voiceover. I think
unlimited Snickers for life.
You do have a great voice.
I would love to do it.
Do you really?
I would love to do that.
All right, well, Adam's got a booth in his house now.
I know. That's amazing. That's why I came today. It was all building up to this moment.
All right, well, we'll throw in Adam's favorite DuckTales episode. You could improv your versions of Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Well, that is actually a great idea for a show, to just like redub all old 80s cartoons.
Just with deep voices,
and
I'm
weird.
I'm not doing a voice, I'm doing this voice.
Like weird adult jokes instead of like the kid jokes.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, man. Yeah, that could happen.
I'm into it. No, but that would be the best gig. Like I like writing animation. I've written on a couple animated shows, and that's like that's so fun because you're like, oh, you punch the washing machine, it hits the moon, and then you just draw it that way. It's just done.
The sky is a limit for animation. Yeah, right? I mean, like you get to think. I mean, workaholics, you can think big, but animation, you can think.
Yeah,
it's just
animated workaholics would be dope.
I know.
That would be a very special episode.
I know.
I've heard Adam talk about it, but you said like when, like, I think he was saying like years later when the show's been off the air for like 25 years and then they did like an animated special that was.
That'd be cool.
Or now.
Yeah, or now. I would love that. But, you know, I think that their secret sauce, not to bring it down, I just think like what they're doing is perfect. I think they're getting out at the right time. I think they're all going to go on to big things. But
you're going to do one more season.
They're doing season 7, yeah. And I don't know. Oh. I mean, I might be so busy on other stuff with whoever, but I would be happy to do it again. It's the most fun writing gig in Hollywood, and I think other people that have been on the show would say that in a heartbeat. Like, it's so fun.
Awesome.
It is. I can attest.
Hey, we leave at like 6. So many writers' rooms are out at like midnight. Like,
yeah. Is that true?
Oh, my God.
Oh, I've been in those writers' rooms.
What?
People tell me these things, and they're like, oh, man, we're there at 2 a.m., like 5 nights a week, and I'm like, I would just quit. That's too much. You're not funny anymore.
There is a cutoff, don't you think? I mean, I guess like we're going out late to be funny, but we're, you know, hopefully somewhat rested. But if you've started
at 8, there's something more.
Especially you guys are going doing sets right after. Whatever.
How are you supposed to keep churning out like ideas at
Espressos? Yeah. They do. I mean, a lot of rooms are like that, and a lot of those great shows are probably like that, and they're probably better writers overall than I'll ever be, but I think that's just insane.
Well,
I would not do that.
Mr. Ed was notorious for having a writer's room cut off at 3 p.m.
Again, like, but that's 300 episodes. I'm telling you, like, some crazy number of episodes.
Awesome. Scotty, thank you so much for doing this, man.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so grateful. Thanks, guys.
This is the best. So, at Mudflap Scotty on
Instagram, and then you guys talk about
your Insta's fun, too, though, real quick. Your Insta's like...
You did post a picture of you riding in a car with a skeleton in the back seat, listening to Metallica.
Yeah, I always have a skeleton in the back of my car.
What?
Yeah.
Why do you do that?
Because I think that life is boring, and if people are like bored and they look out in traffic and see a skeleton looking at them, it like makes them distracted for a couple seconds.
And scream and careen off of a cliff like, what the fuck?
And we're in a valet town. Every valet is like, dude, that scared the shit out of me. And then I was out at a Moonshadows, and they rolled down the back window, and people were posing with my car with a skeleton. The valets rolled down my window, and I came out, and there were people taking pictures with the skeleton in the back of my car. Yeah. So if you ever see a skeleton in the back of a SUV, and then I just bought this Gorilla that I'm going to put in this back of this old beater convertible I got. So if you ever see a red little beater convertible with a Gorilla in the back.
Yeah.
Just, you know, mud flap.
Have you ever, though, thought to, like, pull one of them, like, to go in the carpool lane at night? Like, to maybe just pull? Because I'll tell you, one time at night, I needed to get to Long Beach, and I was really late. And I put my hand up like it was a puppet in the passenger seat just to have a presence there.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
And I was driving really fast, and I was like, I wasn't doing it as a joke. I was like, if the cop is like behind me,
just
I didn't
just glance,
just to see a presence,
top of the head,
and I would even turn it every now and then and talk to myself with it. I mean, that's
crazy. A late night.
That's slightly schizophrenic. But okay.
I was having a rough week, but the gorilla might, or the skeleton.
Gorilla and sunglasses. It'll be me.
Is there going to come a point when your car is just filled with characters?
Different cars, different characters. No, I'm, this is it. This is it for me. Yeah. I mean, ideally, it would be like, you know, a really attractive girl in the back.
Baby steps, Scotty. Yeah, exactly. Baby steps.
Well, thanks for having me,
Scotty. You're the man. This was awesome.
Oh, such a pleasure.
So, that's the show.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.